Yeah, I mean, it's just not keeping the ball in the park. Obviously, the home run and for the closer is, you know, in tight situations is going to hurt you, and it hurt us today.
Despite a winning record, it really was a week of what could have been, and it left us with more questions than answers for the Cubs. Let's take a look at the highlights from the week of April 15th. By the way, Setup Nation, on April 23rd, I have an interview with Taylor McGregor from Marquee. If you have any questions, go ahead and leave them in the comments or email me at kyle@setupman.net. Now, getting to the action on Monday, Ben Brown proved he belongs in the MLB for good. The 24-year-old threw six innings of one-hit ball in Arizona. Brown is the youngest player since Sean Marshall, who was 23 years old at the time, in 2006 to throw at least six innings and allow only one hit for the Cubs. There are only three other players who have accomplished this before the age of 25 in the last quarter century, and their names are Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, and Carlos Zambrano. Ben Brown trying to join the Mount Rushmore of Cubs young phenoms. The offense did virtually nothing in this game, and it felt like the Cubs were toast, but down to their last strike, a wild pitch sends Nico Hoerner soaring from second all the way home, and he ties the game. I believe I can fly. And it only gets better for Hoerner. In the 11th inning, he hits a fastball higher than the Willis Tower into right field for an RBI single, and the Cubs' newest bright spot in the bullpen, Keegan Thompson, locks down the 3-2 win. Tuesday, woof. I don't know if I want to relive this, but I guess I have to. Kyle Hendricks made the kind of history you don't want to make. He gave up seven runs in 4 1/3 innings, and he is officially the only Cub to ever start a season giving up at least five earned runs in his first four starts of the year. But he thanked the offense for showing up to Chase Field on Tuesday. Ian Happ's first home run of the year is a grand slam, and it gives the Cubs an 11-8 lead late in the game. Skip ahead to the ninth, one out away from sealing an 11-10 win, but Adbert Alzolay throws up another gopher ball. This one barely gets out, and Alzolay blows his third save of the year, all on home runs. And the news was not good in extra innings. After a double from Randall Gerchuk, the Cubs lose 12-11 in 10 innings. Not quite the same as blowing an 8-run lead, but that might be the second worst loss of the year. That puts Chicago at a 4-4 West Coast road trip. They need one more win on getaway day to secure a winning road trip. Cody Bellinger's bat started heating up in Arizona, and he blasts the go-ahead bomb to give the Cubs a 3-2 lead. And after a short leash on Jordan Wicks, one of the best stories that you'll hear all year for the Cubs happen in Arizona. Hayden Wesneski comes in and deals, and he does it on almost no sleep.
At 1 a.m., my roommate, Matt Mervis, is knocking on my door, and I'm like, Matt's like, hey, you need to call Marty. Call Marty at 1 a.m. He goes, hey, buddy, you're going to the big leagues. I was like, okay, need to get my things together then. Try to get some sleep. Didn't. Leave 4 a.m., get to the airport in Des Moines. We fly to Chicago because they don't have any direct flights. I get here an hour and a half before the game, and I threw.
So the Cubs secure a 5-4 road trip. Say what you may about it, they could have gone 7-2. They could have also probably gone 3-6. Either way, it's a win on the West Coast, and you love that, especially with them coming back to one of the worst teams in baseball at home, the Miami Marlins. After the first day gets rained out, game one was all Cubs. They scored seven runs in three innings off the Marlins starter AJ Puck. But even more encouraging, Jameson Taillon made his first start of the year, and he was legit. He threw first pitch strikes to the first 15 batters, and the righty ended up giving up one run in five innings. Potentially a first step to a huge lift for the Cubs starting rotation. Chicago cruises to an 8-3 win. On Saturday, day-night doubleheader, Marlins have their talented lefty Jesus Luzardo on the mound, and despite the Cubs getting out to an early 2-0 lead thanks to a Patrick Wisdom 2-run triple, Luzardo kept the Cubs right there. And ultimately, the lack of offense really cost them. Put the cassette deck on repeat. Adbert Alzolay can't hold a one-run lead in the ninth inning, and he gives it up on, you guess it, a home run. This time to Brian De La Cruz. Now, some of Cubs Twitter was saying that this was actually not a bad pitch, and Brian De La Cruz just got a good piece of it. I want to know from you. Put in the comments, do you think that Adbert actually made a good pitch, and De La Cruz got the best of him, or was this a cookie? Fourth blown save. Guys, he only blew three saves all of last year. How much more can Craig Counsell take of this? Because I know us Cubs fans, we're at our wits' end. Two blown saves in 1 week, and the Cubs lose 3-2 in the doubleheader opener. In the nightcap, it looked ugly early, even with Shota Imanaga on the mound. But the bats come alive in the sixth, thanks to Alexander Canario's blast.
Swing and a high fly ball, crushed left field, and he got that one. Canario!
Then the Cubs' best hitter of the season, Michael Busch, who didn't get a single at-bat in the first two games, I might add, comes through in the clutch. Two-run single gives the Cubs a lead, and they would not give it up. Ben Brown throws two scoreless innings, and Hector Neris comes in to get his first save. Shota gets his third win, and the Cubs have won all four of his starts this year. Side note, Cody Bellinger hit a home run for the second straight year on April 20th, 420. This one wasn't as cool as last year's, which was exactly 420 feet. For those of you that don't understand why that is funny, might want to Google 420. Then on Sunday, the Kyle Hendricks conundrum continued. The good news, Hendricks didn't give up 5 earned runs. The bad, he did still give up 4 runs, and by the way, the third longest home run of the year in Major League Baseball. And once again, this is one of the worst teams in baseball and one of the worst offenses in baseball, so the final line isn't exactly an improvement, despite what Kyle said after the game.
Got to take the positives again and progress, you know. Executed a lot mentally, more aggressive on the glove. Yeah, put us in a bad spot again. We had to win that game.
The Cubs tried to inch their way back into this one, but they couldn't quite complete a comeback. Cubs lose 6-3, and even though you don't like seeing them split a series against the Marlins at home, it was still a winning week. Cubs go 4-3 in 7 games. But man, what could have been? And that's the big topic, Adbert Alzolay. There's no easy way to say this. Adbert is not a closer, at least not right now. He might find a way to develop into one in the future, but for a team that looks playoff bound, they need a lockdown closer, and unfortunately, Adbert's not the guy. He may have filled a need for the Cubs last year, but even if you watch his saves from the last season, there was a lot of pitches in the middle of the plate, and he gets away with them. If you missed it, I did take a deeper look into this in a video breakdown where I look at this year and last year, some game film from Adbert. It just popped up for you, but make sure you watch it after we finish this video. Now, Craig Counsell did say that he needs Adbert to get big outs for the Cubs this year, but I just don't see how you can keep running him out there as the closer with these results so far. So what are the options? Well, unfortunately, not much, and that's the even bigger problem. When the Cubs signed Hector Neris for $9 million this offseason, they thought they were getting a potential backup closer who was coming off his best year of his career. But even though he got the save on Saturday night, he has not been good. He is walking 21.9% of batters, only striking out, ironically, exactly the same amount, 21.9% of batters, and his fastball velo is down for the second straight year. Julian Merriweather saved a couple games last year, but he's injured for quite a while, so he's not an option. That means your best bet at this point is really Mark Leiter Jr. Leiter's yet to give up a run in 10 and two-thirds innings this year, and his baseball savant numbers are really off the charts. He gets a ton of chase, strikes out nearly 29% of batters he faces despite only throwing a 91-mile-an-hour fastball, and when the ball is put in play, it's usually a weak ground ball. The only thing you don't like from him is his walk rate, 9.5%. But at this point, beggars can't be choosers. But hey, how about a couple creative solutions for the closer role? Ben Brown or Keegan Thompson? Now that Jameson Taillon is back, Ben Brown may take on more appearances from the bullpen. He was very sharp on Saturday in his 2 innings from the pen, 3 strikeouts, no runs. I thought Craig Counsell was going to run him back out there for the 9th for the save, but he elected for Neris. Brown has basically struck out one batter per inning to start his career, so not a ton of swing and miss, but the fastball and curveball are electric. Now, Keegan might have an outside chance, as we've seen him come back with vengeance here in 2024. His velo is back up, his pitches are sharper, his command is there, and he's looking more like 2022 Keegan, who had a 1.47 ERA in 36 and two-thirds innings out of the bullpen. Either way, this team is exceeding expectations despite all of the major injuries, and Craig Counsell doesn't have a Devin Williams, he doesn't have a Josh Hader, so Jed might want to start looking at some options. Speaking of injuries, Seiya Suzuki is already doing some light baseball activities, which is incredibly good news and shows you that this probably isn't as bad of an oblique issue as it was last year. And Justin Steele threw a live batting practice session this weekend. Craig Counsell said on Sunday after the game that the next step for Steele is to go back to Arizona and get extended sessions. So it looks like you're still looking at a early part of May for Steele to come back. And we've talked about just how badly the Cubs need Justin Steele back. Many of the bullpen problems have come because of the starters not going deep into games. My only concern, though, is that the Cubs will continue to try and fix Hendricks and then move Assad to the bullpen. And if that happens, I'm sorry, that's not a good baseball move. Javier Assad, besides Shota Imanaga, has been the only reliable starter in this rotation. In four starts, he's thrown 21 and a third innings. He has a 2.11 ERA and has struck out 21 batters. And in his career, he's proven to be a better starter than a reliever. In 111 and two-thirds innings as a starter, he has a 2.82 ERA. In 56 and two-thirds innings as a reliever, he has a 3.18 ERA. The numbers don't lie. Please don't send him to the bullpen. But that's this man's opinion. What's yours? Comment below. And coming up after an off day on Monday, the Cubs have 16 days in a row of games. The rough stretch starts with the Astros coming to town for a three-game series. Houston has not been good this season. They're 7-16. They've lost 7 of their last 10. Probables for this series. Now, when this video was made, the Cubs had announced their probables, but Houston has not. So, on Tuesday, Jordan Wicks will go to the mound for the Cubs. Wednesday, Jameson Taillon gets his second start of the season, and then Javier Assad will cap it off in the Thursday game. And the Cubs finish the week in Boston. This will be the first time Chicago has played at Fenway since 2017. Once again, if you didn't see my video earlier this week on Adbert Alzolay, go check it out. It just popped up for you.